So, chapter 22 is Fused Flashback Females. Do we want to popcorn this one?
Sure.
Okay, I'll go first. Bravo's gaze remained fixed on Tookie. Tookie stood back, utterly confused as to why he was looking at her and only her. It was probably because her head was the size of Mayor McCheese.
He's like, yo, is that Mayor McCheese?
Jeez, he's like my favorite McDonald's mascot. Man, I wish I could get an autograph. The girls around her, including Dylan and Kamalini, seemed just as perplexed. Zarpessa let out a horse-like snort. Come on, everyone, don't you get it? He's staring at her because he's never seen someone with such an enormous head. God damn it. Bravo reached up and made a wiping gesture across his nose. On instinct, Tookie touched her nose, too. To her horror, a trail of creamy pea-green slime appeared on her finger. She'd been staring out the window with a giant whipped cream booger on her face!
Tookie, oh my god, that's so embarrassing!
She didn't know whether to run or to find a tissue or a bush to hide behind. Or a bush to hide behind. Can someone explain why you're pressing your nasty hands against our windows? The girls turned to see Persimmon standing in the doorway. Get in single file line, she demanded. Now! Okay, you know what made, like, okay, I get, like, the person who's, like, in charge of the mastication class is kind of supposed to be like, oh, they're the good teacher. But usually, well, in Hogwarts, there were mostly all good teachers except for Snape. Yeah. Snape was the mean one, but he still taught them things.
Yeah.
Having all these mean teachers is like, why are we even here? She demanded, now! The Bellas ran to obey. Where are we going? Chase called out as Persimmon spun around and marched in a dark, narrow hallway. The distance was a bright, flickering light. I was just about to flash my breastosteros.
Chased.
I'm getting the squirt bottle. Getting the fucking squirt bottle.
We're just gonna have to give her the chastity belt at this point.
We might have to get the holy water in here, too. Maybe, like, we might have to get a pope, a llama, and...
Well, she'll probably want to try to fuck the pope.
No!
Which reminds me... I read a really good fan fiction about an AU where Kylo Ren is a hot pope. God damn it. Which is why I thought of that.
God damn it,
son. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I would fuck the pope if it was Adam Driver, but it's not.
I mean, wouldn't we all?
I don't know, man. I've heard it quite consistently now that I've come clean over my Kylo Ren attraction, or Adam Driver attraction, whatever have you character I so choose, that he's just really not that good looking.
By whom is saying this?
You bleep me out if it's...
Maybe. Of course it's other guys saying this about other guys, technically celebrities.
Well, I mean...
He's not... Like, he's... Okay, there are a lot of actors that, like, they don't look conventionally attractive, but they're still attractive.
Jon Bernthal. That's who comes to my mind first, because everyone's like, he's not that attractive. And I'm like, are you blind?
Have you seen his muscles? Hold on, where's the picture?
He's right here.
Right over your bed. Right behind us.
He's watching. Sebastian Stan watches us from every other wall of the room.
They watch you while you're sleeping to know whether you've been naughty or nice, and they're hoping it's naughty.
I feel safer.
You feel safer?
I feel safer with them watching over me.
We also have Brendan Urie watching from here.
I got Green Day staring at me as well. They're all right looking. They're not ugly.
Look, there are a lot.
But you know what? This just draws even bigger attention to the story that I was texting you about. Over the person who was upset and that I played with and manipulated his feelings because I don't date men who look like him. and I had only pulled up pictures of people I know in uniform because we were watching a movie that was heavily regarding people in uniform. And I was like, God damn, that looks really not right. And I'm like, I gotta check.
So you pulled up the pictures.
I did, mostly because, okay.
You need to check the accuracy.
Yes. And that was just me being a film person.
Yep. And it just so happened that they're all people that you've dated.
Yes. We'll go with
I'm saying that in the very tamest way possible. Yes. Saya.
That hesitancy on my part was enough.
I mean, I could say it as it really is. You banged all of them because you're banging your way through, like, all of the U.S. military.
Yes.
You just have to get the Green Beret, and I think you get bingo, or at
If I get the Coast Guard and the Space Force, I get the bingo, but I get a board sweep if I get a Green Beret or a Navy SEAL.
Do you at least have four corners right now?
I think I do. Because my Navy made four.
Space Force! I'm just picturing what that one guy on TikTok does is the representation where he has the... the tinfoil hat and his fingers and he's like potato. And I'm like, that's who you're going to have to get, Saya.
Oh dear.
The potato's going to watch.
Oh no. And not my cat.
And for the Coast Guard, you have to at least go to the East Coast.
I know, but if I go to either coast, there's marine bases on both of them, and I am so fucked. Literally and figuratively.
Just stay away from the marine bases!
I can't! They're everywhere.
Saya, do I just have to, like, come over there and, like, make sure you just, like, squirt you whenever you go near a marine base and just be like, no! No!
No!
No!
Saya, no more!
Saya, no, you're here for only one reason. You know, we could just go down to Florida, because that's probably where you're going to find a Space Force guy.
That's also where I might find a Coast Guard there, too.
So, yeah, you could get two for one.
Isn't there a Marine base in Florida?
Check it!
29 Palms.
Yeah, but check for a Space Force, I guess. I'm assuming Florida, because NASA.
Where is a Space Force base? I'm typing it in right now.
Do it.
Los Angeles.
God damn it. I mean, there's also a marine base there.
Yeah, there is. Oh, shit, I forgot.
I guess we're going to Los Angeles.
Oh, God.
We could go there for multiple reasons.
I know, but now I need to find a Coast Guard.
Oh, my God. It's easy.
You just look for some ghosts!
Just look for a coast!
We have plenty here! This is the land of 10,000 lakes!
Not that type of coast! You need a saltier coast.
Mm-hmm. That's why I went for Navy. Oh, is there one in Wisconsin?
Is there? For the Coast Guard?
One is a coast!
I mean, I wonder if there's technically one in Minnesota because of Lake Superior.
Closer than we thought.
Check!
I'm just finding a whole list.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna do it.
Do it.
I'm gonna sweep this board.
Then we just have to go to Los Angeles for the Space Force.
This is not okay. This is not something we should talk about on our podcast. It's a family show.
It's a family show!
No one ever.
Says us who read a story about a chick getting railed by a raptor.
Yes.
And then us ad-libbing a chick getting railed by dragons.
Yes. Family show.
Family friendly, getting railed by dragons and raptors, all of them reptilian in nature. It doesn't count if it's raptors. Not that type of raptor, not a bird of prey.
Oh, Duluth!
I mean, we can always drive to Duluth. That's easier said than done. But we can do it! It's not that far!
You're not giving me such ideas.
I mean, we can always go on a vacation up to Duluth.
I think we're gonna be filming up there, so...
Well, I mean, you can have some fun up there.
Where the fuck is Camp Lejeune? Because I'm, like, super screwed if that's in Florida, too.
I'm gonna just keep reading now. We've been here long enough. You need to get that filthy mouth of yours cleaned up, Persimmon said in a disgusted voice.
Damn, nobody called me out like that!
It fits both. The fluttering light at the end of the hallway ended into an immense glowing circle. A mannequin stood at the reception desk shaped like the letters H, O, and A. The letters moved around... Homeowners Association? Letters moved around a disorganized jumble, probably making it hard to set anything on the surface. There was a great round room behind the desk, its walls covered in a furry-looking fabric and its ceiling gently pulsing up and down as if breathing. I know where we are, Zarpessa boasted. The ooh-ah!
Oh boy.
A breathy voice from high above whispered, ooh-ah! The great satisfaction, the letters of the desk moved to spell, ooh-ah. O-O-A-ah. Hoorah!
So, no.
That's what it sounded like. You know, you would have done it too.
I would have.
You would have done it. The smell of blood oranges wafted through the air, specifically blood oranges. This is the place where seasoned Bellas go to have their aching joints soothed after their intense 7-7 tournament training, Zarpessa told them self-importantly while staring at herself in the mirror behind the reception desk. It's also where instructors and visiting intoxibellas go to be primed and primped. We have one of these attached to my bedroom at home, but it'll be so much more fun to experience this with all of you, even Tookie, even though I said I'd cannibalize her, even though I don't want to, but I would be a cannibal as long as I wouldn't eat her because she's gross and disgusting. Ain't that right, Perry? I don't know if that was heard in specific. Oh, squitchy, squitchy.
Is that a good berry?
Is that a good berry? Popcorn, Saya.
Okay. Tookie and Dylan both rolled their eyes. Yeah, right, Tookie mouthed. Six blank-eyed mannequins appeared from invisible doors, towels in their hands. Persimmon turned to the Bellas. You will break up into groups of three girls. Each group will be led by its own mannequin, and the rules are, enjoy yourselves. That's it. She seemed very pained to issue such a command. Oh, no. A mannequin waved an ornate hand mirror over the group. Instantly, light in one of six colors fell onto the girls. Three Bellas glowed burgundy, making them a group. Zarpessa, Chaste, and Bibiana were color-coded fire engine red. Tookie, Dylan, and Kamalini. The last girls in line glowed canary yellow. The mannequin's plastic bodies shimmered with the colors that matched their group. A yellow glowing mannequin approached Tookie, Dylan, and Kamalini. Follow, please follow. She said in a barely perceptible monotone, are you messing with my cat?
No, he wanted pets.
Oh.
Look at him.
He's so cute.
He is so cute.
Hi, Barry.
Hi, Barry. He's like... He's so cute. You just can't help but want to pet him.
He's so soft. He's very tired.
He's a very tired baby.
The yellow mannequin walked them briskly down one of the many paths that split off from the round room. The other groups of girls went down different hallways. Tookie let her hand drag along the soft white wall. Cashmere, she whispered. Creamy had a suit made in this stuff a few years ago. Of course, only a month or so later, she'd discarded it, deeming it past its prime.
Because you're tight. That was a big sneeze.
Oh. He's been squeaky. Thinking of Creamy, Tookie got a pang. What is she doing right now? Does she miss me at all? What kind of place has Cashmere on its walls? Dylan whispered. Kamalini nodded. I know, it's ridiculous, shameful even. The mannequin led Tookie, Dylan, and Kamalini into an expansive rectangular room with a metal floor and walls. Rows of polished stone slabs filled the room, dozens of Bellas lying atop them. Toki recognized some of the girls from mastication, but there were others there she had never seen. All the girls were completely nude except for Toki, Kamalini, and Dylan.
Why is everyone naked?
I don't know. The Uwa will remove your soiled clothing, shoes, and underwear, the yellow mannequin informed them. Now, if you want to think about that any other way, like... I mean, that's... Yeah, the army version of that call. Yes, they will do the same.
Oh, my.
Dylan stopped short, looking warily at the other girls in the room. Is there a private area I can use to change? I don't want all these chicks looking at my booty. I, too, feel quite uncomfortable with the idea of getting disrobed while so many look on, Kamalini seconded. Toki didn't want to get naked around all these people either.
Why do we have to have this conversation?
Why do we have to have this scene?
Right?
Lie down in the last three slabs here, the mannequin instructed flatly, pointing. The girls hesitantly obeyed. Dozens of hands came up from under the slabs and removed their clothes. The hands were just like those that had dressed Toki in the THBC bubble and CL at Runaway. Toki covered her private parts with her own hands. Kamalini did the same. Toki felt cold and vulnerable, and certain everyone was staring at her. So she fixed her gaze on the ceiling instead. Someone had written something on the tiles in black pen. Gina has two secrets. One, she hates CL. Two, it rhymes with destroy.
It rhymes with destroy?
Employ.
Leroy?
Look it up right now. What rhymes with...
Right? Put my phone... Jesus fucking Christ, Maya. Why do you keep losing your fucking phone? Jesus.
Fucking Christ, keep reading. Next, a strong cushion of air pushed the girls above the stone slab so that they hovered over their tables.
Did I leave it in the bathroom?
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Warm water spewed down from openings above them. Water rushed up at them as well, seemingly gushing from the surface of the stone. The water changed from soapy to dingy to soapy to clear, finally becoming a citrusy orange spray. Toki closed her eyes, trying to relax and not fret about her exposed, awkward body. Ew, Dylan said beside her. Ah, Kamalini said, and they all giggled. The yellow mannequin gave the girls what looked like green strapless terry cloth mini dresses with asymmetrical hems. The little towel frocks read ooh on the front and ah on the back. Put these on, please. We will care for your belly uniforms and return them to you cleaned and pressed. The girls put on the towel dresses and then the mannequin led them on a tour of the UA. The place was a labyrinth of narrow hallways decorated with silks, fine chenilles, and more cashmere walls. Lanterns glowed from every alcove, incandescent butterflies providing the light. The scent of blood oranges hung heavily in the air and the girls felt soft sand underfoot. Sand?
Ooh, it's coarse and irritating and it gets everywhere.
Down some hallways, they saw elaborate makeup stations and steaming baths. In one, an upper-class Bella sat in a pedicure chair and commanded, "Environment, tropical island with pink sand and turquoise waves." Suddenly, the fabric on the walls melted away, revealing an idyllic island setting, complete with a shining sun, warm breezes, rose-colored sand, and an ocean so blue it looked like a swimming pool. Popcorn Maya.
Oh boy. Yep. Toki, Dylan, and Kamalini gasped. That is a special feature of the Uwa, the mannequin told them. One can change her surroundings to whatever she likes. Try it. Please, madam, environment. Home. Kamalini asked politely. The walls started to reflect an immense room. Oops, never mind, madam, Kamalini said hurriedly. The room immediately turned back into its spa atmosphere. Tookie bravely stepped forward next environment inside a whipped cream factory with beach waves crashing outside the window.
Wow.
In an instant, the room transformed into an enormous space with walls and floors made of cream. Machines surrounding the area churned out endless types of flavors, light and heavy, caramel and coffee. There was a 5-story tall picture window with a perfect view of the sea's surf-worthy waves. Tookie smiled shakily. She wished Lizzie could see this. Exodus, she whispered. Exodus. All right now, the yellow mannequin said, grabbing Tookie's arm and moving down the hall. We must keep going. They walked down a long corridor full of treatment rooms. Bella's murmured with pleasure, but when Tookie looked in one room, Bella was laying on her stomach with an enormous boulder crushing her spine. The latest in hot stone treatments. Years before civilians will hear about it, the mannequin explained. In another treatment room, a mannequin was peeling a layer of skin off of Abella's face. The skin came off in a perfect mask, pigment pores and all. When the mannequin pressed it up against a plastic-molded head, the mask opened its eyes and smiled. Facial slaw, the yellow mannequin guiding the girl said. And in yet another room, Abella stepped inside a giant clamshell. The clam's valves snapped shut rapidly, trapping the Bellas inside. Let me guess, Dylan said. Body wrap? Body snap, the mannequin said. But close enough. They walked in the next room, a giant space that had a large circle painted in the middle of the floor. 3 women dressed in ornate, patterned, flowing muumuus sat very close together in the corner. The hair was fused into one huge beehive. Dylan whispered, I wonder if their actual heads are connected. Their eyes were closed and their beehive hairdo turned in slow, meditative circles. They seemed unaware of anything around them. Flashback, females, the mannequin whispered reverently. They have the ability to take a person to a time in her life that has already happened. You cannot change the past, only witness it. Most Bellas find it very therapeutic. You can take your friends with you in your flashback, and they will see and hear everything that happened also. But if one of you wants to do it, your whole group must follow. The doors seal once someone has stepped into the circle, trapping everyone inside. Forever! No Jesus. Exceptions. Dylan looked excitedly at the others. Should we do it? Tookie shifted from one foot to the other. She couldn't think of a single thing she wanted to relive. I'm not letting you chicken out, girl! Dylan exclaimed, looking at Tookie. If you don't go, Kamalini and I can do it. You want to do it too, Kamalini? Right, Kamalini? Kamalini pulled in her bottom lip. Come on, Kamalini. You in? Dylan pressed. Well, okay, Kamalini said hesitantly. But if you can see the flashback, I want to see. I have to prepare you. I am ashamed of my house. Please understand. Dylan chuckled. Who are we to judge if your family's hit in a rough patch? I live in a store. Now what about you, Tookie? Okay, she said, instantly regretting it. Which of you would like to go first? The mannequin asked. I guess I will, Kamalini volunteered, so I can get it over with quickly. She walked further into the room. One of the flashback females approached Kamalini and led her to the circle. As soon as Kamalini crossed its yellow boundaries, the iron concrete doors in the room banged shut, making Tookie flinch. Kamalini stood very still. She nodded as if answering questions, though the flashback female hadn't said a word. It is so, the female said. It felt like Tookie's feet were melting into the ground. The sinking feeling crept up to her knees, her hips, her waist, her torso, her shoulders, then her neck. For a moment, all of her senses were muffled, but then they snapped into precise clarity. She blinked slowly and opened her eyes. Tookie, Dylan, and Kamalini now stood at a window overlooking an immense patchwork of dilapidated shacks. Smoke rose from many of the shanties. Beautiful cocoa, maple, and copper-skinned children dressed in bright fabrics ran about. A younger Kamalini, sans headbanger, climbed out of the very window at which the girls were standing and dropped to the ground. She ran toward the middle of the shanty town and stopped at a group of about 2 dozen people of varying ages. The clothes might have been tattered and drab, but as soon as they saw Kamalini, their smiles were brighter than the most luxurious silks. Kamalini, where are we? Tookie whispered. We are standing in my bedroom, but before you look, brace yourselves. Everyone turned and gasped. A gigantic four-poster bed stood in the corner, surrounded by jeweled chandeliers and ornate crystal lamps. Plush velvet and bright leather furniture filled the rest of the space. The ceiling was adorned with intricately carved wood and white marble. Cashmere covered the walls!
Why are we using this as a wallpaper?
I don't know. You lived here? Dylan's eyes goggled. What in the heck is there to be ashamed of? Are you crazy? Is that her catchphrase?
I think so.
I enjoyed and appreciated living here, but I felt tormented, too. Kamalini pointed to the window. Right outside are so many people with so much less. And that big group of people the young me is greeting right now? They are the Pandey family?
I don't know.
Dylan stared at all the people young Kamalini was with. Oh, I thought me having four sisses and bros was a big fam. But people in Shawar got bigger ones than mine. They are extended family as well, Kamalini explained. Aunts, cousins, great-grandparents. But their living conditions were so unfortunate. I used to sneak them unused items, clothes, school books, healthy food, and vitamins. I secretly convinced one of the grips on my mother's films to run plumbing and electricity lines from our house to their tiny home, too. My family has so much, it felt like a sin to not share. The young Kamalini in the flashback approached the Pandey family and grabbed the hands of a sweet-faced child. Ah, fuck.
Oh, no.
Ah, fuck, I'm in the story. Ah, fuck, I'm a child from Chakra, I guess.
Could have fooled me.
That is Maya, my favorite, Kamalini said to Tookie. She is 8 years old. I guess I'm an 8-year-old girl.
Yep, you sure fucking are.
Fuck. I'm just going to say it, Popcorn Saya now.
Guess what, young Kamalini cried to the family. I actually secured parts for all of you in my mother's next film. And I do not mean a few rupees worth of background work. I mean bona fide speaking parts, real paychecks. The family looked gratefully at one another. Some began to sob, but it was happy sobbing, their eyes alight with joy. But the scene does not shoot here in Chakra, Kamalini went on. It is the scene that leads up to the grand dance number, and it shoots in Cappuccina and Trejolet. Their surroundings abruptly shifted to the famous main canal in Cappuccina.
Italy?
I think so.
Oh, God.
Movie cameras focused on the Pandey family, who recited their lines with the greatest of ease and grace. Then the scene whooshed again, this time to a film location in Trejolet, in the shadow of the metropolis's famous sculptural tower.
It's France.
We get it. Young Kamalini burst onto set. Bonjour, ma, she called out. I will be your assistant director today. Where should the Pandey family stand in this scene? Kamalini's mother, a tall, striking chakra woman with huge, soulful eyes, a curvy body, and vermilion in her hair, turned and smiled. I don't know how to say that.
Betty,
did I tell you how proud of you I am? Her mother said to young Kamalini, rubbing her daughter's head. We are shooting the big thunderstorm scene today. Make sure they have the appropriate props. Kamalini guided the Pandey family to the base of the backdrop, depicting a brilliant blue sky. As everyone took their places, Kamalini's mother yelled, "Action!"
I just want to ask.
I don't think Tyra's ever been on, like, any sort of functioning movie set before.
Also, how old is Kamalini in this? And she's assistant directing?
Kamalini, you should not have this position.
Oh my god, you're too young to be this stressed out.
The rain machine sprayed the set with water. The cameras began to roll. The thunder sound effect boomed.
Boom! Yeah, because we totally actively have that on a set.
Yeah. The Pandeys performed well, even with faux rain drenching them. Young Kamalini grinned with pride. Betty, get ready to cue the dancers, Kamalini's mother shouted to her. Just as Maya, the youngest Pandey, was about to say the last line of the scene, another ear-splitting sound thundered above. The heavy sky-blue backdrop tipped and plummeted to the ground. Everyone screamed and scattered, but for some it was too late. Thick white dust poured all around like smoke. Tookie waved her hand in front of her face, trying to see. Suddenly, a keening cry rang out. Maya crawled from under the rubble, blood streaming down her forehead. Ma! Papa! Nani! Tookie's heart stopped. She had a sinking feeling about what had just happened. Next to her, present-day Kamalini let out a tortured whimper. No, she cried. No! She ran to the rubble and tried to move the bricks away to rescue the other family members, but her fingers just swished through the scene. Useless.
What the fuck happened?
The set piece fell?
The set piece fell.
The blue backdrop fell, even though I thought it was an on-location shoot.
I guess they had a backdrop in an on-location shoot, which makes no sense.
Which would have been big enough to fall and crush people.
Meaning they should have had this at a studio?
Yeah.
Not on location.
Yeah.
But, someone wasn't doing their fucking job.
Everyone?
Yeah, everyone. Someone was scratching their ass during this part.
Everyone?
Everyone was scratching their ass simultaneously because someone put itching powder in their underwear.
Suddenly, the flashback female's calm voice rang out through the room. It's time to go now. The film set receded and the girls were back in the UA again. Kamalini crumpled to the floor in tears. They all perished that day because of me. This, she pointed to her headbanger, helps me block it out, but I will never forgive myself. Maya became an orphan. She moved in with us, but a week later she ran away. We searched all of Chakra, but could not find her. I do not know if she is dead or alive. I should have never tried to help them.
Are you sure she ran away? Are we sure she would have ran away? Black market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't your fault, Tookie said gently. You tried to give them a better life. Before Kamalini could respond, the flashback females approached a shell-shocked Dylan and took her to the center of the circle. Dylan also nodded as if answering questions that weren't spoken. In a flash, they were all in an immense park within the Bubig-Teak Nation. Instead of endless posters and signs advertising sales, there were inspirational messages like, smiles are the best currency, and keep Bubig-Teak beautiful, save our park. A man and a sweet-looking girl about 6 years old stood next to a jungle gym. The little blonde girl had Dylan's sweet, feisty face. My God, there's my daddy, Dylan murmured, staring at him. She stepped up to her dad and tried to touch his hair. Her hand swirled through his head, like it was paint being smeared in the air. But that didn't deter her. She leaned in close, her head partly glopping into his. That just ruined the whole moment.
Yeah.
Dylan's dad picked up a 6-year-old Dylan and placed her on a slide. He pushed her on a swing set and helped her on in monkey bars. But it all seemed too much for him. Winded, he kneeled down to his daughter. Dylan, my baby, daddy's little girl, daddy's gonna have to go somewhere far away very, very soon.
Oh no, it's the dead dad.
On a trip, young Dylan asked, can I come? Afraid not, there were tears in her father's eyes. And before I go, I just want to make sure I say something to you that I want you to remember always. He cleared his throat.
Can I read this part?
Yes.
Yes. Hold on, I need my best Southern gentleman voice. Dylan, baby, daddy wants you to know that you are beautiful. Those other little skinny things in the nation, don't ever let them get you down. Don't change nothing about you, boo. Not one thing, because everything's about you is perfect. Suddenly, Dylan's father started to cough. He seemed unable to catch his breath. His face became bright red, and then he dropped to the ground. It would become blue. Yeah, it would become red, then blue. Daddy? Little Dylan cried, hovering over him. Daddy, what's wrong? Shane! Shane! Come back, Shane! Her father looked at her with glassy eyes. His mouth opened and closed, but he couldn't speak. In seconds, a boo-big teak ambulance roared up without anyone calling. And the EMTs jumped out and loaded Dylan's father onto the stretcher. Daddy! Young Dylan cried again and again. A few moments later, the girls returned to the ooh-ah. Oh, man, hers.
Why is everyone's about death?
Death! Dylan lay on the floor sobbing. Well, her dad did die right in front of her.
He did.
Oh, poor girl. I mean, I can relate, except the other half. The yellow mannequin turned to Tookie expectantly. Are you ready? Tookie shook her head and stared toward Dylan. Without seeing her move her mouth and emit a sound, Tookie heard one of the fat flashback females say, Let her be, Tookie. The pain is a part of the healing. Tookie licked her lips, suddenly feeling terrified. She wasn't ready to face the past if it was going to hurt her as much as it had hurt her friends. I want to skip my turn. The mannequin frowned. But it's rewarding bonding experience by trauma dumping on everyone. And will help you grow, Isabella. And if you refuse, I'll have to mark your time in the ooh-ah as incomplete. Ooh-ah is a class as well, you see.
Damn, that's shit. Rude.
You gotta experience your trauma in order to pass class. Great. Sounds like every final ever.
Right?
Tookie let out a huge sigh. Failing something as simple and supposedly relaxing as ooh-ah wasn't an option. Setting aside all her anxiety, she stepped into the circle. The flashback females walked toward her, mouth shut, but Tookie could hear them speaking loud and clear. Breathe deeply, they said. Stand very still in the circle. Come back to face with your demons. It is from here that you can lead you back into a time that has already happened. Tookie glanced over her shoulder at Kamalini and Dylan. Their eyes seemed to silently speak to her, too. It's okay, Tookie. It's okay, they say that with their eyes. Instead of their mouths. She turned back to the females. She didn't even have to speak her request. Just think it. Please just show me something good from my life. Anything. Even if it's something I can't remember. It is so. One of the females answered.
Yeah, there's a typo.
Shutting her eyes. There was a whoosh of light. Tookie felt like her brain was being turned upside down and inside out. But it wasn't painful at all. Instead, it felt like her head was being relieved of pressure like a tea kettle whistling out steam. Oh man, I wish my head could do that sometimes.
Oh, right?
Right, especially with headaches. I feel like that would solve all my problems. When she opened her eyes, she was in her house in Peppertown. Only, it looked newer. Not as ramshackle, and her bedroom was spotless. Sheer curtains embroidered with yellow ducks flanked the sparkling windows. A stuffed giraffe stood proudly in the corner. A small bed was in the middle of the room, covered with a thick yellow comforter with white tassels along the edge. Plush barriers ran down the side of the bed, a protective measure to prevent a sleeper from rolling onto the floor. Mrs. Delacreme entered the room. A man who certainly must have been Mr. Delacreme was holding her hand, though Tookie couldn't see his face.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Tookie's jaw dropped. She couldn't recall ever seeing her parents display physical affection. This was before her father's accident, so his body was cut and toned. Creamy was still as wrinkled as she was today, but she looked softer, happier. She carried an adorable toddler dressed in a bright yellow onesie pajamas. The miracle? But then she heard her mother murmuring, There, there, Tookie, there, there. Tookie was transfixed. She had never seen baby photos of herself. But where's Bellissima, she wondered. Then she realized the doll didn't exist yet. Tookie stared at her 2-year-old self. She was actually strangely cute. Well, I mean, all toddlers kind of look cute.
Yeah.
Okay, this is just weird story.
Until they start screaming, and you're like, no, I'll take it back.
Okay, just family story time from my side of the family. My cousin's daughter, she is an adorable little girl, but my cousin has said it herself that she has her dad's head. Why? Because her dad's head is big. She kind of has a little bit of a big head. But she is adorable. She is an adorable 2-year-old girl. She is very loud. She is adorable. she's just adorable. That's all I can say, and that's what this is making me think of. So I'm also going to judge how the interaction, how this two-year-old acts, because it's like, most two-year-olds kind of act the same. Not yet hideously disproportionate, frustratingly awkward teenage, not yet the hideously disproportionate, frustratingly awkward teenager she'd grown to be. All teenagers are awkward. Mr. Delacreme gently touched his baby daughter's head, her hair a mixture of textures that seemed deliberate, not random and haphazard. 6 teeth already, dumpling. You're jumping the gun. You're gonna need one of these soon. He handed her a toddler-sized toothbrush. Young Tookie grabbed the toothbrush and bit on it. Mr. Delacreme turned to his wife and smiled. Look at her. She's strong, just like her daddy, and she looks just like me, doesn't she? You wish, Mrs. Delacreme playfully smacked him on the muscular arm. My Tookie is the spitting image of her mommy. Why is this going to make me cry a little? Oh. Is it my daddy issues?
I think so.
It's my daddy issues, man. Tookie couldn't believe it. My Tookie? Mommy? When did Creamy allow herself to be called Mommy? When did she stop? Mrs. Delacreme laid little Tookie down on her bed. Time to give up now, dumpling, Mr. Delacreme said, taking away the toothbrush. There will be plenty of days ahead when I'll have to force you to brush your teeth. Right now, just enjoy being the beautiful baby girl that you are. God fucking damn it. God fucking damn it, Model Land. Why? Her toothbrush. Wait. Oh, man. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Saya.
The toothbrush.
It's the toothbrush.
Yeah, I know.
The toothbrush. And he had taken her toothbrush previously. The toothbrush, Saya!
I'm understanding.
It came back!
I know it did.
It came back!
I'm with it. I'm there.
Smart storytelling!
Yeah.
Is this what it feels like? Is this what it feels like to have smart storytelling and having things that happen in previous chapters?
I mean, a toothbrush is kind of, but you know.
But still, it mattered here, and then it was there, and now it came back. It came back.
Oh my god!
The whole thing is, it was a fucking toothbrush. Oh my god! Is this what smart storytelling feels like?
I think so.
It's not always smart, but this is actually something. Oh my god, I'm actually crying over a toothbrush. Oh my god. I'm sorry, Barry. And her father's hand again, but he was holding it with love, not as a weapon. Then both parents gave baby Tookie a gentle kiss on her forehead. Tears fell from Tookie's eyes onto her green terry cloth ooh ah dress. God, that ruined the sentiment.
Yeah.
Dylan and Kamalini looked at her curiously. I never knew they loved me, she said, her heart banging fast. They were going to send me away. They didn't want me anymore. What changed between then and now? Was it Miracle? His eye accident? Or something else? The memory rolled on. Sleepy, huh, Dumplin'? I know. I see you fighting it, Mr. Delacreme said as he kissed little Tookie's toes. Just close those eyes and dream those dreams that will come true one day. Go on now. Go to sleep, Dumplin'. Just dream. Just go. For all of us. God fucking damn it.
Wow.
Present-day Tookie squeezed her eyes shut. It's time to leave now, the flashback female said. With that, the flashback disappeared and young Tookie and her tender and loving parents were gone. Suddenly there's like just a giant break. I'm just gonna popcorn this to Saya.
Tookie uncapped a pink pen and began to write in Gaudian. Dear Lizzie, I wonder if you know where I am right now. If you saw them choose me to come to this special place, I wonder if you think I'm a deserter, a two-faced liar, a selfish egomaniac who ditched our friendship at the very first opportunity. I hope not. If you do know where I am, I hope you're looking up at the mountain, wondering what I'm doing right now, not hating me with all your heart. Because I want to tell you everything, Lizzie. I miss our talks. I miss how we laugh. I miss knowing where you are and where you aren't. I've got new friends here, but wait a sec, Lizzie. Don't be jealous. You'd love them. They're like us. A little odd, a bit quirky, and definitely real. Their imperfections are what make them shine with the most scintillating, effervescent inner glow you have ever seen. Things have changed in other ways, too. I have transformed from the bangle bobble and bead forget-a-girl into Model N's stare-at-her girl. Everyone either thinks I'm a freak or that I'm here as an experiment. Remember those sacrifice rumors, Lizzie? I'm still not sure if they're true. Maybe they are after me. Now I'm starting to sound like you, smiley face. The latest person to join in on the Glare Fest is Bravo, a male model attending our brother's school. Bestosterone.
Ugh.
We both said that with so much disappointment.
Just, I'm so disappointed.
Everyone else acts as if he's the incarnation of some long-forgotten god, but all I can do when I see him is turn away because I'm not like other girls.
Wait, is he Cthulhu?
I think so.
Well, he is handsome Squidward.
He embarrassed me, Lizzie, reaching toward his nose to indicate that I should wipe away some vile olive-tinted whipped cream snot in front of everyone. And instead of turning away in disgust, they all stared at me. I was a remember girl, but in all the wrong ways. But before Bravo so rudely pointed out the liquid blemish dripping from my nostril, I'd gotten the compliment of my life. A teacher, they're called gurus here, told me, I ain't half bad, which to me sounded like a symphony, a warm blanket on a Shivera day, the same kind of affirmation you used to give me, something I miss like crazy. Lizzie, there are so many things I lack here at Model N. One is the exceptional beauty that the majority of my peers in this paradise have. Another is the gift, a lumiere, a special glowing nightlight that enhances its recipient's natural beauty. I also lack a family back at home that misses me and counts down the days until they can see me again. But tonight, you know what? I don't care. Because tonight, I ain't half bad, and I'm praying that wherever you are, you ain't half bad too. I miss you, Hot Queen. Good night, Lizzie. Tookie.
And she has
FG, the forget a girl, question mark?
Above the eye for the dot in the eye.
P.S. I hope you're staying away. I hope you're staying far away from sharp rocks.
P.S. I hope you're not self-harming yourself. God, I shouldn't laugh at that. It's not a bad story.
No.
Also, chapter 23 isn't that long. Do you think I could just power through it?
I think you could.
Let's power through chapter 23, The Diabolical Divide. While Tookie lay fast asleep in her lumiereless bed in the D, a plan was in action at the base of the Model Land Mountain.
Oh my.
An enormous sign swayed crookedly in the breeze. Warning, enter and you may perish painfully. Beyond it was a jungle of tangled barbed plants, boulders, and rotting steel. Every few moments, an eerie hoot, screech, or scream was emitted somewhere from the darkness. Moans, grumbles, the sound of nails scraping down a piece of glass, pops of metal underfoot, an insane high-pitched laugh. Slowly, a ragtag crowd crunched past the sign and lined up against a large rock. Jessamine, a beautiful teenage girl from the most prestigious section of Ladorno, and her mother, Mina Lynn, a woman in her late 40s holding a limp advertisement cut from a newspaper in her trembling hand. After then, none other than the hairy Abigail Good, her T-Dod head injury having healed, and her hairier mother, who was appropriately named Harriet. The good women, the name of the family, the good women carried duffels that sported hairy sewn-on patches, prompting their pro-hair causes. Jessamine covered her mouth in a failed attempt to stifle a laugh. Oh, wow, I love what you've done with their hair, she said in a voice loud enough for the good woman to hear. A twitching, hunchback man strode up, pulling a leather hood over his head to obscure his scaly skin, beady eyes, and unformingly pointed teeth. Is it a lizard person?
I think so.
It's a reptilian! His kind was unfamiliar to the group, but a certain porcelain-skinned girl named Piper would know them quite well. Oh, it came back.
It did.
It came back. She lived with the daily terror of scores of them, threatening to penetrate her homeland's grand protective dome after all.
That's what she said.
All the women nervously stepped back. "What's he doing here?" Jessamy whispered to her mother. "Everyone knows men don't usually go on these things, unless they're diehard and desperate testosterone wannabes like those dumb architects were."
Hey, don't shame him.
Don't shame the architects. Shh, Mina whispered. Watches were checked, canteens were uncapped to make sure an appropriate level of water remained for the first part of the trip. Hiking booted toes tapped, sweaty brows dripped, temples pounded in agony. Veins throbbed and bulged. Everyone knew what the others were thinking. Would this be a mistake, as it had been for everyone before them who had made the attempt?
Yes.
For they were the victims of the Pilgrim Plague.
Oh.
Bah, bah, bah. About to embark on the treacherous trek up the diabolical divide to Muddleland. And they had chosen to clear this clear black night to begin the most important journey of their lives. It would take several months.
Several months!
To climb the mountain!
What is this, like climbing Mount Everest?
Yes!
Well, be careful, Maya. Mountain climbing's now racist.
God fucking damn it.
I'm sorry. I had to.
Well, it's mostly all women going on this trip, except for that one dude.
Now, you see, this is a slippery slope to walk, because... You know...
Hold on.
Okay.
I'm gonna keep reading. You'll get more of what the fuck is going on.
Thank you.
There would be no turning back. A final figure emerged from the darkness. Their guide, a professional trespasser or raider named Macy Kamata. Kamata? Macy Kamata? It's K-M-A-T-A. I'm assuming Kamata?
Yeah, that would be my guess.
He wore a large pack crammed with survival gear, the straps cutting into his shoulders.
Ow.
Even though he was as overburdened as a pack mule, Kamata still looked strong and robust. He was like the brawny man in the paper towels. He had weathered, sunburnt skin and a thick crew cut and hooded eyes that constantly darted back and forth. He opened one of the breast pockets on his jumpsuit and retrieved a plastic bag containing several dozen pills.
Holy Christ.
He poured the entire bag into his mouth and swallowed all the pills with no water.
You know what? That's a terrifying trait, and I hate seeing people I know do it.
Why does this sound like someone you would have on your bang list?
Because that's how they all take pills. Like, I'm not shitting you.
Oh my god.
I'm like, I'm sorry, did you just drink that with no water?
Did I also have you at the crew cut?
Yeah.
He motioned for the group
Boot!
To... He motioned for the group to line up in front of him. Time for antibiotics, venom blockers, and miasma inhibitors, he said, placing a plastic bag of pills in each pilgrim's hand. Swallow them if you want to survive the bites and other deadly forces that lurk on the divide. If you refuse, you're asking for certain death the moment we pass the first junction. The entire group gulped down the pills. Kamata stuck a needle into his rock-hard butt.
Hell yeah.
And I found your favorite character. Also, he just dropped trow in the middle of this group of women and injected it in his rock-hard butt.
I think
he just flexes and like, "Arr!"
You ever flex your ass so hard?
Flex your ass so hard you shit while you take an injection pill up the ass. I'm sorry.
This is a silver bullet surprise, man.
Oh my god.
Oh god.
Injecting a thick, murky liquid, a booster, he explained. The pilgrims lined up as they were told. Jessamy recoiled from the acidic burn of the needle plunging deep into her backside. They all dropped trow.
Yes.
You're experienced on the mountain, correct? Lynn asked. Your ad said you were, and I'm the best damn raider money can motivate, Kamata answered gruffly. But you understand, that's a fine print, right?
Is this the Marines?
I make no guarantees for your safety, your comfort, your success, your lives. I point, you go. Everyone understand? Yes, it's the Marines.
This is the Marines.
He's an ex-Marine. No wonder you... Just no wonder. All the pilgrims nodded. Okay then, time to reward the raider. Kamada extended his palm. Everyone handed one thick wad of cash. When it was Lynn's turn, she stared tearfully at the money in her hand. This is my entire life savings. Please promise me that you'll deliver us to Model Land safely. Behind her, Jessamy snorted. What is her ancient ass going for, or anyway? Shh, her mother said, pushing a hand down over her daughter's mouth. All right, Kamada said, rushing his hands together. Are we ready? The group gave a resounding yes. Satisfied, Kamada pulled a flashlight out of his pocket and beamed it toward the diabolical divide. Wait! A voice screeched behind them. Two figures dressed in camouflage combat suits bounded up the ridge. Giant, transparent packs full of flares, eating utensils, sleeping bags, axes, a fold-up tent, and lanterns swung from their backs. They both wore night vision goggles. Hold on, take a guess on who you think this is.
I already know who it is.
God fucking get me right ahead. Don't leave without us, the taller of the two cried. We're on your list. We signed up yesterday. She stifled around in her pocket of her camo pants and pulled out a stack of crisp bills. The guide instantly smiled and snatched it from her. So let's see, he pulled up his registration list. You must be... Mrs. de la Creme, the tall figure interrupted, patting her wrinkly tan skin. But you can call me Creamly, and this is my daughter Miracle. Honey, stop dancing, please. Miracle stopped her frantic movements and pulled in her bottom lip. Wait, she just started dancing?
Yeah, she was just dancing the whole way there.
She just started dancing? Kamada nodded. And what's that? He motioned to something Mrs. de la Creme had pressed to her chest. Her name is Bellissima, Creamy said with annoyance. A doll going up the divide, Kamada blinked. Well, that's a first. He hitched his backpack higher on his shoulder and opened one of its many compartments.
Yes.
Take these, he said, handing them a pack of pills. He then gave Creamy and Miracle shots in their derrieres. Creamy turned Bellissima over and exposed her hard plastic rear end. Give her a shot, too!
I'm just imagining all these pills are only ibuprofen because that's all they give you. It's a bunch of fucking ibuprofen.
Oh my god. Kamada studied Creamy. Whatever you say, lady. He had to push hard to get the needle to penetrate Bellissima's fanny. I hope you're ready for what lies ahead. Ready? I just let you shoot my Miracle and Bellissima with God knows what. Oh my god, she's an anti-vaxxer.
I mean, truly it is God knows what.
This is true.
The murky brown liquid.
This is true, but still. We've never been more ready in our lives. Someone up there has made a grave mistake and she's going to pay dearly for what she's done. There was such an intense look in her eyes that everyone took a small step away from her. Okay, then, the guide said. He turned to the pilgrims. Off we go.
I feel like everybody just took a small step back from her because she's holding a fucking
doll. That just has a hole in its ass and it's dripping that weird brown murky liquid. Okay. Tookie selected a purple pen and began a letter in Trés Jolie, which is just French.
Yes.
Dear Creamy, you probably can't believe it, but I've been in Model Land for 3 whole months. I'd like to think you'd be proud of me, but I know you're not. Your hopes and dreams have been pinned on the Miracle, not me. I know you think she deserves to be here instead. Maybe she does. But I've got a secret. I like it here. In fact, I love it here. And I love my new friends. You might even say I'm doing okay. In each runaway, Kara, and mastication class, I get it together just a little bit more. I'm not running into walls anymore, Creamy. I slept with my Centura on every night, so that Serpessa, someone who may actually be more evil than you, can steal it from me. And in Gust Gap, a class on how to keep your eyes open even in extreme winds, I managed to hold out even in a hurricane. I guess I had some practice from the time you made me go to Chivera and stand in line for 5 hours for that brand new, inhumane chinchilla jacket for Miracle. Creamy, I want to go for it here. Am I crazy to think that I should try to do my best? If I were still down in Peppertown, crammed in that tiny room with Miracle, retrieving baby gherkins out of a jar for you, and generally being an all-around forget-a-girl, I would probably think I was insane. But now I want to go for it 100%. I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that out loud, though, so instead I'll just keep whispering it to myself and writing it to you. I know a secret about you. I know you once loved me. I know you once held me in your arms and looked at me like I was a miracle. That hurts, Creamy. What happened? How did you go from love to wanting to send me away to be a factory dependent? Even if I became an Intoxabella, which of course won't happen, would you feel different about me? I wish I could say I miss you, but I don't. I miss the old you, the one I don't even remember, but not the you I know now. Your daughter, Tookie, Abella at Modelland. And she didn't spell Tookie with the F-G, she spelled it with a dot!
Damn!
Whoa!
Calm down there, Edgelord.
Oh my! So we saw Miracle and
Creamy.
And Creamy again. Well, this is gonna get interesting. I wonder what's gonna happen with them.